Okay, so this week's Parsha's Parsha Akrei Mot. We've had a big break because of Pesach, so we haven't had a Parsha, you know, not read for 2 weeks already. So it'll be nearly a 3 week break from the Parsha of the week. The title of the class is Adultery and Ashley Madison, Beyond the Cardinal Sin and the Trail. So we're going to go a deep dive into the world of adultery, where the Hebrew word is, it says in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not commit adultery. But it's expressed in this Parsha, okay? Just as this Parsha, which they called, another way is referred to as the Parshat Arayot, the Parsha Forbidden Relationships, we read that on Yom Kippur afternoon, okay? So, which is interesting, like if you were going to pick any area of the Torah to give it some special mention, why would you pick the pro, you know, discussing the sexual prohibited relationships? Why would you do that?
One reason was that the afternoon of Yom Kippur was similar to Tu B'Av. You had men and women meeting, and so they knew the rules of what they were allowed to do and not allowed to do.
Okay, so that, so what Shane is bringing down is that in the time of the Mishnah and earlier, the sitter was not very well developed, so there was a lot of free time. The main service was happening in the temple. Yes, you were fasting. Yes, you were not wearing leather shoes. Unless you were not washing, putting on ornaments, or cohabitating. But still, there would be a time that there would be shiduchim going on. But there's a more basic reason than that. The bottom line is that people like sex.
What?
And thus, any restriction is intrinsically an issue.
Just saying, that's news to me.
Okay, that's it. All right, so let's get into it. We're not going to play the full 8 minute. If you want to, you can listen to it on your own time. A portion of the interview about Ashley Madison, which started, I don't know, 10 years ago, 7 years ago, which allows, as we're going to learn, people who are married to be able to effectively, have affairs more discreetly. 2015, there was a big hacking, and all 36 million members were exposed, and some, you know, blackmailed, and it was a whole hoo-ha. So you would think they would be down and out. No, they're back on, and they increased the security, and apparently they're back in business. So. So it's something which is irrelevant. Let's start off with an interesting fact. I got this from Wikipedia, so it's got to be true. All right. Three 1990 studies in the United States using nationally representative samples have found that about 10 to 50% of women and 20 to 25% of men admit to have engaged in extramarital sex. Now, one could extrapolate that these numbers are what? High or low?
Low.
Why?
Because a lot of people, I would imagine, still feel guilt, even though it's anonymous, regarding admitting that they've had an affair.
I would agree. The Kinsey report went as high as 50%, okay? Which was Alfred Kinsey, a researcher in sexuality, actually the first who did a comprehensive study. Throughout the number as high as 50%. So let's say it's 25%. So that means you're in the grocery store and you see four married people. One of them has had an affair or will have an affair.
That's for men.
Okay, fine. Four men. And if you see six women, eight women. Okay, all right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, 10.
All right, you'll work it out with the averages, okay? Mm-hmm. You average it all together, it's 22%, whatever it is. The bottom line is, it's not, you would imagine it'd be very insignificant. Kamash Milan is not. All right, so let's go to the video. As they say, let's go to the videotape, and let's see if I can do the new share feature. Okay, share sound.
convention of marriage, there has been infidelity.
How's it sound? Better?
Much better. That's perfect.
Okay,
that's like I was just
ABC
playing
show scandal. Even the president of the United States has an affair, and this season a new wrinkle. His wife is having one too, which may be a case of art imitating life. Some studies show a dramatic spike of cheating among women in recent years. So what's driving wives to stray, and could a notorious website be playing a role? Here's ABC's Rebecca Jarvis.
When women cheat, it's often considered a scandal. Lady, what?
You ruined our marriage, you
In dating been as accessible as it is today, with infidelity and anonymity just a click away. So what is it that drives some women to cheat?
I was looking for that next high. I felt, you know, alone.
We spoke to one cheating wife. We'll call her Catherine. She asked us not to show her face, and we disguised her voice. She isn't shy about sharing her story.
I went through a period where I tried to live my life like I would have had I been single in 20.
Catherine and her husband were married for 14 years. After major weight loss and multiple plastic surgeries, she began looking for excitement outside of what she considered her own stale marriage and turned to the notorious cheaters website, AshleyMadison.com.
I was feeling very lonely one night. I was bored. I was on my phone in the parking lot and sitting in my car. And I pulled up Ashley Madison and decided to open my first profile just to see what would happen. What it's like being a woman on Ashley Madison is feeling like you're the only woman on earth. It's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Its motto? Life is short. Have an affair. Noel Biederman started the site more than 10 years ago.
You make more than $40 million a month on people's infidelity.
We're the biggest dating service on the planet. This is not a kid's game. This is an enterprise of significance.
We sat down with Noel and his wife, Amanda, who rarely gives interviews.
The first time he tells you about this idea, what is your response?
Well, I wanted to make sure he wasn't having a midlife crisis.
Biederman says he built a billion-dollar business betting on infidelity. 25 million members in 37 countries.
So you're encouraging secrecy.
I'm encouraging secrecy, yes, but I'm not necessarily encouraging infidelity. I don't think it needs all that much encouragement.
How are you not encouraging infidelity?
Well, I think long before I launched Ashley Madison, there were affairs, and long after I'm gone, there'll be affairs. And so what I'm just trying to do is help people have the more perfect affair.
Catherine says she carried on affairs with men she met online for months, often meeting them at bars and their houses and even traveling to other cities.
I met with probably 50 or more men, somewhere around 30 to 40 of those encounters. Led to a sexual encounter. It was addictive.
It is a little like a drug. It's a rush.
Wendy Plump knows all about the elusive allure of an affair. She says she strayed with three different men during her 18-year marriage.
You remember what it's like when you fell in love with your spouse? It's like that when you have an affair all over again.
But it turns out she wasn't the only one who cheated.
We both let the marriage down, both of us.
The veteran reporter used her ruinous marriage as the subject of her memoir, Vow. She and her husband are now divorced.
I got many, many letters from women who had either had affairs or whose husbands had had affairs. This is a lot more common than I would have imagined.
Some statistics show that 21% of married men have had an affair compared to 15% of married women. But that number for women has spiked in the last two decades, up nearly 40%. Wendy says that society still judges cheating wives much more harshly. Even the first lady on Scandal.
Women, when they cheat, are viewed as having cheated on the family. When men cheat, they cheat on their wife.
According to data from AshleyMadison.com, a woman is more prone to cheat at certain stress points in her life, notably right before turning 40. That's what happened to Catherine.
So I wanted to be wanted. I wanted every man to think, I have got to have her.
Women cheat because they believe that they're missing something. It seems like men cheat because they want to sleep with someone else. It's less an emotional thing.
In both cases, the effects were devastating. Catherine's husband says he slowly began to suspect his wife's infidelity. He also didn't want us to show his face.
The thought that she was cheating on me, it had crossed my mind. The late night meetings, they seemed unplanned. I got to be a little bit more suspicious.
After Catherine confessed her affair, her husband said it left him crushed.
Whatever vows we made, she said, I'm breaking them right here. Asked her, how dare she? I was furious with her.
But he had his own secret. An affair started long before his wife ever turned to Ashley Madison.
I felt in my soul that he was seeing someone else.
I really don't have a good reason why I cheated. It was just something new and exciting. And I have no good reason why.
Though his website markets infidelity, ironically, Noel Biederman says he and his wife Amanda are happily married and completely faithful.
What if your husband cheated on you?
I'd be devastated. Truth be told, I would be devastated.
So does it not upset you then that he's encouraging that or enabling that for others?
I don't see it as encouragement or enabling. It's going to happen. It happens regardless of the business.
How would you feel if Amanda...
Devastated, but I would never blame an inanimate object. If that happened, that's because somehow I wasn't feeling what she needed in the marriage.
Ashley Madison essentially was suicide. When I went to bed with the first man I met on Ashley Madison, I knew that I was dying inside.
Noel insists that his business does people more good than harm, that the threat of infidelity can be a marital wake-up call.
So you've never looked yourself in the mirror and said, I am creating a platform that is enabling something that my own wife would leave me for.
You see it differently than I do. I see it as a platform that helps people stay married. I help millions of people find contentment, passion, and happiness.
I don't think infidelity helps any marriage. Okay, I think people should work through the problems before it gets to infidelity.
Our goal is to rip you and your marriage apart and give you the tools that you need to fix them. Marriage counselors Jim and Elizabeth Carey.
All right, you get the basic idea. How was the sound?
Excellent. Perfect.
All right, we have solved perfect. The sound problem.
Yeah, definitely.
You're good.
Where did you find that? Is that where's that setting?
When you go on the share screen, I'm just going to go on the share. On the bottom left, it says share computer sound. I never read it or noticed it, and I went onto YouTube of like how to share videos while on Zoom, and then some dude, you know, there you can find how to do pretty much anything on YouTube. How
right.
to weld a nuclear device? Oh, YouTube, sure. Some, you know, first get visual material. There's always some dude making something on. Everybody's videoing everything on YouTube.
I don't recommend Googling that.
Right, I understand it. But my point being is that, and therefore, some guy already solved it.
Right.
Yeah, and then I watched the video, which was a 1 minute and 24 second video, and here we have good sound.
Those are the best kind. Okay. Well, I'm glad you found it.
I'm glad you're good. So we that's it. And actually, getting a better microphone is actually worse to pick up all the ambient sound. So it's whatever. The whole. Anyways, all right. Why are the people in the interviews having affairs?
They're bored with their relationship.
Say it again?
They're bored with their relationship. They want something new.
Is it simply a boredom factor?
Well, that woman who didn't want her name known said she did it because she wanted to feel wanted and needed to feel hot and have people chasing her. And the other woman said it was like chasing the high of when they had first met their husband. And it's the high that comes with being wanted and that initial connection.
Okay. So, all right, so we're going to go deeper into that. What age did women tend to have affairs, according to the Ashley Madison? If that date is accurate, I don't know. We'll go with it just for the benefit of our sheer.
40 or approaching 40.
And what is significant of that?
Well, I think the significance of 40 is more cultural than real.
Okay, but culturally, fine. What's the idea? But psychologically, what's significant about that?
Yeah, 40 is, you know, over the hill. Can't, for the most part, you know, you may not be able to have kids anymore. You may be portrayed or seen as old.
So, but therefore, why is the person now motivated at age 39 to have an affair?
Because they want to get back to the mode where they feel like they're desirable. After 40, you feel like, or it, I guess culturally, women don't feel desirable after 40 anymore. So as they're approaching 40, they want to have like
obviously, I don't think that's intrinsically true, but they're
right. But apparently, it seems like, according to the video, as women get to 40, they want to have sort of a pre-getting to 40 party.
Right. Well, so what's called the midlife? What's the definition of a midlife crisis?
Well, they're questioning, individuals questioning their worth on some level.
Well, let's go back. Like a guy's, like the classic stereotypical thing that guys do when they have a midlife crisis. What is that?
Buy a sports car.
Buy the sports car. So let's break that down.
Wait, what'd you say?
Buying the sports car, buying, of course, the convertible red sports car. What is that accomplishing?
It brings back their youth.
Right, like they're not like chauffeuring around kids anymore. It's like there's no room for like a child seat or whatever.
It's all about them.
Right, so the bottom line is the person views that the good of life was living college life, where he could enjoy the party lifestyle. Now the guy's middle-aged, married, kids, wife, all nine yards. So he can vicariously enjoy himself that he's like the hot, desirable guy. But the reality is that's why he's always the subject of comedy. Because the reality is he can't go back. You're still a 50-year-old dude with a receding hairline, with a gut, with sunglasses on, driving an overpriced car. And you're not desirable. And if a girl is finding you desirable, it's because perhaps she finds you desirable for your wallet, not you. If there would be conceivably a gold digger, I guess marrying one stereotype with another stereotype. So in that point, in an absence to go, as they feel that youth is leaving them, they have to sort of like be involved in this journey of indulgement to sort of get this, as you said, one last hurrah before, quote unquote, their life is over. Now, in Judaism, getting older is a blessing if you've lived your life properly, because you have more life experience. God willing, you have more wisdom. You're on track for a much more richer, meaningful life. All right, let's go back to 3. What factors decide whether a woman will have an affair? In other words, not every, obviously it's not a comprehensive video like it showed you 7 minutes, but there are other variables which use your own life.
Just like what the video said, like, the one woman, she wanted to feel desired, like everybody wanted her.
Okay, I think that's a part of that. But what is happening? What do you think is happening in her marriage?
Like something lacking. She doesn't feel fulfilled in the marriage.
She feels ignored, maybe.
Right. So therefore, there's a foundational emotional deficit happening. Basically happens that the marriage becomes we have these kids. We have joint custody of the children. We're under one roof, but there really is no passion or interest with each other. They just sort of go about life. Sometimes you'll have it get to the point where the couple will be living, the emotional distance between the two will be to the extent that they are living under the same roof and having a essentially sexless marriage. It's more common than you think, okay? Now, in what way do people justify their affairs? In other words, they don't want to leave the other person. They want to stay married. They just want to have the affair. What's their rationale? And that was Joel Bitterman, the Jewish starter of Ashley Madison. By the way, that's not called the Kiddush Hashem. Starting a website. to facilitate more effective affairs. Not a Kiddush Hashem.
Sorry. I'm assuming his wife is not Jewish either.
No, she, Amanda, way Jewish.
Why? Because her name is Amanda?
No, my, I don't know. I don't. I wasn't her Masada Kiddush, so I don't know her absolute Yichud, but my Judar is pretty good. They're both Jews.
Okay.
She was dying. She was squirming.
What do you mean she was squirming?
Yeah, she wasn't buying it. Because when the reporter was asking all the right questions, like, so you're creating a website that if that person, that which is done for you, you know, that basically they're asking the Havarech Mocha question. That right. Which is hateful to you, do not do to others. So what are you doing? You're profiting on other people's misery.
Right. Right. That's a messed up situation, by the way. I don't know how he lives with himself, but whatever.
Whatever. He got fired from being CEO after the big break. You know, he has some role in the fat thing, but after 36 million profiles were hacked, shall we say, heads had the role.
Right.
Okay. So what do people justify? Now, these are people who don't want to leave the marriage. They want to stay married, but they want to have the affair. What's the shot?
They think nobody's getting hurt because the other person doesn't know.
Okay.
The important thing is to do the duty to the family, to the kids, but they can go out and please themselves with whatever they need to while they live under the same roof.
But so they argue, I'm a happier person. I have to outsource this particular set of needs, right? Either the male or the female. I like the other parts of the, we have a nice family, we have nice kids, we have a nice life, we have a nice social life, whatever, all the other, what's called joys of married life. And I just outsource those things.
Yeah, really, they see the marriage as important to their life in some aspect of their life.
Most people having affairs, they want to keep the marriage, but they want to keep the affair.
Right.
Now, in some cultures, like in France, having the quote-unquote the mistress is like even accepted. Or everybody knows about it. It's what they call an open marriage. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, Italy is popular for that also, I think.
Right, basically, it's a continental European thing. Okay.
All right.
Now we're moving on into the ideas here. Okay. Here's a key question: how does a person coming from a Tinder hookup culture transition into monogamous married life? What are the challenges? And why is that person, male or female, going into monogamous married life?
Well, in the modern age, if you go into the Tinder hookup culture, I don't know what would be pushing them into monogamous married life, other than if they have a tremendous desire to have children. But even
That's not a small thing. They have a desire to have children.
Right, but even then, in the modern age, I think there's probably larger and larger communities of people that are willing to have children outside of marriage.
True, but there are many people who are, during their college and young adult stage, will be in this Tinder hookup situation, but will eventually get married.
Right.
There's okay. Also the opinion of what Rabbi Penny just said, where it's a younger person thing, whether you're in college or you're in 20s, you're in your 20s, and when you get that it's desire to hook up with everyone out of you and feel the urge to settle down is when you make that transition, or people make that transition.
Right, so what is the urge to settle down? Where is the cause of that?
Society, that live in a society where getting married, having kids, having a family, that's what part of the American dream is.
100%. There's a huge amount of social pressure for married life. It's less than it was in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but it's still present. And also, in a way it works is it goes by your social group. If all your friends in your social group have gotten married, it's very, there's this implicit stress. And not to mention, for a woman, there's an intrinsic maternal interest for many women. They want to be married more so, and also die as well. You know what I'm saying? So, but then what is the challenge if the guy or gal has been involved in the Tinder culture and they finally settle down to get married? What's the problem? What's going to be the challenge?
They're going to have to limit their sexual expression to one person.
Right. And how's that going to work for them?
It's not.
Mendel's very clear cut. It's not.
Mendel, you're a pessimist.
That is true.
Okay. So I didn't say it's doomed to failure. I just say, what's the challenge? One is that, so therefore, if anything does not work out in their marriage, they hearken back to the whole world of fantasy that they experienced before marriage, right? And they want to relive that. Yeah. Now, of course, they delete all the feelings of emptiness that also was come along with superficial, non-emotional, meaningful relationships. You know what I'm saying? They delete all the bad parts and take all the, it's like when you watch on the news or on ESPN, they put all like the best plays of the game and they delete all the boring parts. So you have like a minute and a half of all the best moments. In reality, a baseball game can get darn boring. You know, you could be there sitting out there frying in the sun in the stadium watching. There could be 3 hours watching a game where the best moments can be basically reduced down to 94 seconds. So, all right, question number 6. Do you think that a single person immersed in Tinder hookup culture is more or less likely to become an Ashley Madison customer in married life? Why or why not?
Yeah, I think they certainly do. If you go up, especially for, there are kids these days that are probably 14, 15, and 16 in high school who are probably using Tinder to have their first sexual encounter.
That seems a little young, but the amount of people on Tinder and other things, other platforms are in the tens of millions.
Yeah. So when they get married and when the marriage potentially goes stale or things are a little bit boring or tense or more difficult than they may have expected, they're going to look for that same fun outlet that they had when they were a teenager and when they were in college to go have fun.
I think that's a fair assessment. Okay, then we get to some of the elements in the parsha. In what way do Hilchot Nidah, those are the family married life laws, which I'll explain very briefly, promote intimacy and maturity and help people avoid the pitfalls of Ashley Madison? How familiar you are with the laws of family purity, but when a Jewish couple gets married, the marriage is, the sexual activity of the marriage is affected by the woman's menstrual cycle. So when the woman becomes she has her period, she becomes what they call a nida, which we're going to read in the pasuk there. At that point, all physical contact, not just having sex, but even the rabbis even says, even physical contact, hugging and kissing is prohibited during that time till she goes to the mikvah and becomes available for sexual
life. Congress.
Right. Sexual life, whatever you want to call that. Intimacy. Okay. So how does that help intimacy and maturity and help people avoid the pitfalls of Ashley Madison?
Ruthie has a really beautiful way of explaining it, and says that for 2 weeks, the couple, or the husband and wife, are lovers, and for 2 weeks out of the month, they're best friends. And she'll also explain that it won't fix a broken marriage, But if you have a marriage with a very strong foundation, this will keep that marriage intact. It forces the couple to have 2 weeks where they can't solve their problems with sex, but to solve their problems with verbal communication and to actually talk to each other and hear and listen to each other.
Yes. So I agree with that 100%. Another thing, which is what the Talmud says, that when the woman comes back from the mikveh after this two-week break, in the eyes of her husband, she's like Ket Kala. She is akin to a bride. What is that idea? Very important idea.
That idea that they're speaking about in the Gemara.
Which really deals with a problem which is happening in the which would help people in these marriages.
Is it that they're kind of new to each other again?
100%. In the American phrase, in the classic American marriage, they have the old joke, and I don't think it's literally true, but it's metaphorically true, that in the first year of marriage in America, if you put a penny in the jar any time that you're intimate, and then after a year you have the jar of pennies, that after that year of marriage, you take a penny out after you're intimate, you won't take out all the pennies. So what happened with that metaphor, I don't know if it's literally true, you know, I'm just saying that concept with that metaphor.
Good analogy.
What? That analogy is saying that part of the challenge here is that the people fall in love, they sort of gorge themselves in sexuality, they by definition get bored of each other sexually, and then it's hard to regenerate that. Now, there really is a deeper point that which I'm going to now reveal what's happening in these marriages. The bigger challenge here is which is not actually a sexual thing. What's happening, which both those women said, I love the rush. I love the rush of being wanted. I love the rush of when we were like when I was just meeting my husband for the first time. There's a fundamental problem I'm going to posit in many of these relationships, which is called the meaningful life gap. In other words, when a person feels their life is purposeless, without direction, without content, it's a very painful psychological state. So what do people do? You do the hard work of trying to address that and asking tough questions like, what is the purpose of life? What am I on this earth for? What am I trying to accomplish? Okay? The Torah has a profound answer to those questions. But most people don't have the training or education to address that. So the simpler immediate solution is distraction. Some people distract the sense of emptiness in their life with food. Thus, you cannot walk a block in any metropolitan area in the United States of America without passing two restaurants or some place you can buy food which is designed for immediate entertainment. Entertainment food, otherwise known as junk food, snack food, fast food. Okay? It's a tool of distraction. I feel happy, I celebrate. I feel sad, I compensate. I feel depressed, I compensate. So sex is another way of doing that. I could cover up the loneliness, sadness, deficit of my life by having these meaningless affairs, which have the immediate rush. What's the rush about the? There's another aspect of the affair which is also very intoxicating. It's A, both people find each other very amazingly interesting because everybody's at the beginning part of the relationship. That's the A. Also, it has sort of a covert, sneaky sort of like a there's a whole you know, sort of like an entire excitement around it. It's not just a regular relationship, it's a covert, it's an affair. You know what I'm saying?
Doing something you know somebody would be upset about finding out that you're doing.
Right. So they add an entire allure, they call it the forbidden fruit, whatever you want to call it, adds another sizzle to that steak. So I'm not here to tell you that it's not exciting, because it definitely is. You're not going to have 35 million people on a website. And many. And by the way, on Tinder, 40% of people on Tinder are married. 40%. They don't even care about those people. Are not even so mocked, but on the secrecy.
Right.
So it's a disaster. So really, the problem is not a sexual problem. The problem is a meaning problem. If you don't have a sense of what the meaningful life is all about, then the problems begin. And the question is, well, how are you going to self-medicate? Are you going to do it through food? Are you going to do it through sex? I can do it through drinking. I can do it through drugs. I can do it through shopping. I can do it through workaholicking. You know what I mean? Or you can do some combination of those six things. You know what I'm saying? Which is, or you can be totally emerging on like binging on entertainment. I'm going to watch whole years of episodes on Netflix. So when I get back from my painful job until I wake up the next day, I've just basically. You know, and then simultaneously do all three. Watch Netflix while eating snack food, while drinking beer, or, you know, all three in one. A triple shot distraction, and put a little porn on there too. So you get all four. You get four distractions in one. How efficient is that? Pretty efficient. So I've just described not a small amount of Americans.
No, you have not.
So the bottom line is what's happening is not there's an intrinsic simchas achayim problem. They don't want to think about. So it's an escape, distraction. That's why, and this is just one. You know, now some are more harmful than others. Nobody already hurt. Nobody already devastated anybody else by eating a Twinkie. You know what I'm saying? You have a bad day. You have two Twinkies. You didn't betray anybody. You didn't destroy a relationship. You know what I'm saying? So there are best, and having a l'chaim at the end of the day because you've had a rough day, it's okay. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you need a distraction. You know what I'm saying? It's all about quantity and less dangerous versus more dangerous. You know what I'm saying? But that's a major motivator of this entire phenomena. Also, second point is, we discussed this on many occasions, I'm just going to reiterate the point, if a person has what is the goal of the marriage? If the goal of marriage is to basically extract romantic satisfaction from the other person, well, that's going to be burnout, the person's going to resent, then you're going to have problems. If your person, as nicely Shane said, is the person who is your friend, the Chevrolet has a nice way of describing the couple. Re'im Ahuvim, beloved friends. So it's foundationally a friendship, which partakes of a love relationship as well. You know what I'm saying? So the intimacy is good, but it's a friendship. And what's a friendship? What is friendship? We discuss it on many occasions. Sharing core values, learning, chesed, community, etc. Building, having proper children. So that's a different kind of, so therefore, the it's not all based upon is the other person a source of amazing sexual satisfaction. Yes, it's an important part, and the laws of need to promote it, strengthen it, but it's not the totality of it. Okay? As they say, love, you know, in a certain sense, from that perspective, love, the essential love comes after marriage, when there's an appreciation of the goodness of the other person. We discussed it on other classes. Is that point clear? So the chiddush I'm telling you is that the really getting to the core of the affair, and if you read articles about affairs, it always the woman or the man that says, I felt underappreciated. I felt discarded. I felt low. I felt, you know, it comes from there's a deep hole they're trying to solve. And therefore, I have, oh, so this person, this other person, he or she thinks I'm beloved. You know what I'm saying? So it's trying to solve a psychological problem, which generally does not solve the problem. It generally causes, you have your original problem, and now you made another problem after the excitement wears off. Because the person is also not going to, they also want their original marriage, so they're not going to leave the other person for this person. You know what I'm saying? So what each person wants is not really going to be satisfied. Okay. Is that clear? Just before I go on, is that sort of, so most people, if I ask most people, why is adultery bad? The Torah says it's forbidden, it's in the Ten Commandments. True. Why do most, if you ask most, why is adultery bad? What do most people say?
Because you're hurting the other person.
So, all right. So if you put, what is the challenge of that argument?
If they never find out, it can't hurt them.
There you go. Perfect. What they don't know won't hurt them. but the answer is, yes. You are not going to, if you can get away with the affair, and theoretically you could, you know, I'm sure there are affairs that till each person's dying day are not revealed, right? You know, some will, I think many will not be revealed. I think that's possible. I don't know, I don't have any statistics on that. But the bottom line is, the problem is that the intrinsic problem is they have, the betrayal is that they are not dealing with the problem, and they are not being honest with the other person. There's a betrayal of the trust, and they're basically stuck in an infantile state, and they're not growing out of it. And the reality is, in most cases, in many cases, it creates tremendous social damage, because they do come out, and then people's lives are destroyed. Many lives are destroyed, and so the Torah have, you know, made that, you know, gave the highest level of prohibition of involved in an adulterous affair. All right, let's go on. Let's get into the Chumash. This is chapter 18. Shana Reed.
Hashem spoke to Moshe, telling him to speak to the Israelites and say to them, I am Hashem. Do not follow the ways of Egypt, where you once lived, nor of Canaan, where I will be bringing you. Do not follow any of their customs.
All right, stop right there. So the key thing is, this is a very important point. He's about to get into the sexual prohibitions. What are they associated with?
Idolatry.
Right. It's a part of the idolatrous societies of Egypt and Canaan, where basically there are no sexual barriers. Where basically be a child indulging any immediate gratification you want is the good of life. There's nothing higher than physical sensation. I go on.
Follow my laws and be careful to keep my decrees, for I am Hashem your Lord. Keep my decrees and laws, since it is only by keeping them that a person can truly live. I am Hashem.
All right, so Hashem is telling Moshe, tells Jewish people, that the Chiddush is, you would think that restriction is painful and therefore does not bring happiness. He's telling you that no, through the discipline of the law, you will be truly live. That's a major insight that the Torah has. Through the discipline of law, you truly can live and have a meaningful existence. Go on.
No person shall approach a close relative, Sha'er, to commit a sexual offense. I am Hashem.
Right. So the Torah then prohibits all, I'm not going to list every single blood relative that a person cannot have an intimate relationship with. Okay. Now, why did the Torah have to forbid this? What can you assume was going on?
People were having sexual relationships with those family members.
Yes. So that shows you that the reason why we have a tremendous aversion to that is because we have it socially taboo, but not intrinsically taboo. A. B, if you Google, which I did, incest in America, it's not small. And what? B, it's obviously highly underreported. So these kinds of abuses, more frequently with father-in-law, you know, stepdads and stepdaughters, or you know, those things that happen. You know, you'll see the statistics. It's a shocking amount. It's not small. So the people look at the Torah and says, "Oh, that's crazy." No, it's not crazy. It's happening all the time. It's just covered up. All right, let's keep on going.
Do not marry a woman and then take her sister as a rival to her, as long as the first one is alive. Do not come close to a woman who is ritually unclean because of her menstruation, since this is a sexual offense.
All right, so this is a prohibition, the prohibition of a couple having relations when the woman is a nida, or premarital sex is basically having sexuality with Anita. Any girl who's over 12 years old is going to be on the cycle, and even until she goes to the process of tahara and the mikvah, it's the same prohibition. It's a very serious prohibition of kares. I go on.
Do not lie carnally with your neighbor's wife, since this will defile her.
Okay, so basically, what are the ways of Egypt and Canaan?
Have sex with whoever you want.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, this is a list of particular things. I think, yeah, I don't know exactly what the customs of Egypt were, but, I mean, this is all heterosexual. This isn't, you know.
No, they also
I don't think this really scratches the surface of what took place in Egypt.
Right. Okay, so they also had homosexual and lesbian relationships as well. One of the Chazal, the Torah Shel Peh says, one of the features of, the Rashi brings us down, the Ram brings us down, what was the Maaseh Mitzrayim? One is that two men would get married in the Mitzrayim. It would be a state-sanctioned marriage. So we think in America that we were very progressive because we have what? Many states or all states can have homosexual marriage. This was the way of Mitzrayim 3,500 years ago. Yeah. They, not just homosexuality, but state-sanctioned homosexuality.
I think there's also a mention of Mormonism. I think there was also a mention of a woman marrying two men.
And a woman marrying two men, correct. That's the third one.
Yeah.
So it basically was whatever sexual impulse anybody had was fully validated. You know? Now, in America, we're at that same level, because I was discussing with Rabbi Broyd, who's a professor of law and also a rabbi. He says now, this is a shocker, are you ready for this? That in they decriminalized adult incest in New Jersey. What does that mean?
Whoa, they already did that?
Yeah.
Adult incest has been decriminalized in New Jersey.
So if you have a brother and a sister who are over 21 years old, they want to live together, it's not a crime anymore. Now you have a society where there's only one issue, consent. As long as two people consent, it's permitted. The idea of the main principle of kedusha, of sanctity, of living a disciplined life for a higher purpose has been completely stripped from our society.
Well, from New Jersey, anyway.
It's coming to a theater, as they say, coming to a theater near you, okay? I mean, it's just a point there. So that literally is Miss Ryan.
Does that allow brother and sister to get married?
In New Jersey? I don't know. But it's decriminalized. It used to be incest was a crime.
They just have to add another letter to the LGBTQ whatever thing, and then soon they'll have equal rights to get married.
Right.
Within the laws of Yichud, a brother and sister cannot live alone together for more than 30 days.
Correct. So that shows you, by the way, what do you see from that halacha? We're jumping ahead a little bit, Shana, but what do we see from that?
That's a good point, right. There's a risk of that happening in that sort of arrangement.
Right. In other words, you would think that the barrier of intimacy between brother and sister is an iron wall that is impenetrable. Halacha says no. Halacha has an extremely, shockingly honest understanding of the full range of sexuality. And we're repressed and we don't want to accept it. All right, let's get into some of the halachas here and then we'll jump from there. Just keep on going. All right, Mendel, read it up.
What, number two or chapter 21, halacha 1?
Halacha 1 in the Rambam.
Okay.
Forbidden sexual relations. Good.
Chapter 21, halacha 1. Whoever shares physical intimacy with one of the arayos, or the forbidden sexual partners for that person, I guess?
Correct. That's a good definition.
Okay. Without actually becoming involved in sexual relations or embraces and kisses one of them out of desire and derives pleasure from the physical contact, should be lashed according to scriptural law.
Right, so this is what people call shomer nagiyah. Shomer nagiyah does not mean professional contact. It means making out. And I'm going to translate the halacha and the English into American terminology.
Okay, so physical
is a Torah violation, which is worthy of getting whipped for if they get warned.
All right, so he's making a distinction between physical intimacy and sexual relations.
Yeah, in other words, foreplay without sex.
Okay, but if I'm visiting my mom and I give her a hug and a kiss, that's not what this
no,
is.
No, she's excluded from the list.
Well,
Rambam says later on that a mother grandmother or a father grandfather to their daughter is not prohibited in kissing and hugging.
So if I come home to my wife while she's Anita and I give her a hug and a kiss after work. Huh?
No.
You can't do that. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. This is derived from Leviticus 18:30, which states to refrain from perform any of these abominable practices. And Ibid, which states do not draw close to reveal nakedness, implied is that we are forbidden to draw close to acts that lead to revealing nakedness.
Right. Now here's since foreplay is a step prior to sexuality, but it has not, but even the Torah forbade that state, even if it doesn't eventuate in any kind of sexual intercourse. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That state per se is forbidden. Okay, that's a biblical violation. Okay, we'll keep on going.
Chapter 22, halacha 1. It is forbidden to enter into privacy with any of the women forbidden as arayos. One, even if she is elderly or a young girl, for this leads to forbidden relations. The only exceptions are a woman and her son, a father and his daughter, a husband with his wife, who is in the nida state.
Right. So privacy here, the word in Hebrew is yichud. That not only are you not allowed to have physical contact, you can't be alone with them. Why? Because being alone is the first step of a process.
But a husband is allowed to be in yichud with his wife, even though she's Anita.
Right. Provide they've had sex at least once.
I'm sorry?
Provide they've had relations at least once. In other words, if they get married and she's Anita day one, they're prohibited. They have to sleep in separate. He has to sleep with a man, and she has to sleep with a woman.
Well, they can't even go into the yichud room after marriage.
They go into the yichud room, and typically somebody's there hiding.
Okay.
Because they don't want anybody to know. Because weird, like, oh, why don't you go into the yichud room? Oh, we're gonna go there later. If they're what they call a chuppat nida, you want to keep it discreet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Whole world does not need, or all of your wedding guests do not need to know what is the bride's time of the month.
Exactly. I've had to officiate some of these things, and it's just very stressful.
Okay.
Because the goal is to keep it like on the DL.
All right, I got it.
We move on.
Halacha number two, the prohibition against entering into yichud with the woman forbidden as a riot has been transmitted by the oral tradition. So right. It's not d'oraisa.
Now the word is midivrei Kabbalah, which of course is a great debate. Those who know learn Rambam. Sometimes the Rambam use a term that could be learned this way or that way. Does Rambam mean midivrei Kabbalah, it's a biblical violation, or is it a rabbinic violation? So it's not clear. Not clear. Yeah. All right. Go on.
Halacha number trace. When the incident concerning Amnon and Tamar occurred, David and his court decreed a prohibition against entering into privacy with an unmarried woman. Although an unmarried woman is not an erva, such an act is considered as entering into privacy with an erva.
But no, since an unmarried woman, you could marry them. And also remember, at the time of the temple, women who were single, since they want to gain access to, let's say, join the Seder and have the Korban Pesach, they would also go to the mikvah. So you have an unmarried girl who is not Anita. So she's not an Arias to anybody. I mean, anybody, right? She can get married. So Amnon and Tamar, are you familiar with that story?
No.
They're half brother and sister, and Amnon rapes his sister. And he creates a whole ruse that he's sick, and she comes in to give him, help him out, and she rapes him. So you got to read that story in the Tanakh.
Okay.
But after that event, David and his court made a new thing that even single women, who are even not Anita, are prohibited or in yichud. Nowadays, women only go to the mikvah 4 days before their wedding. So an unmarried woman is a nida and is an erba, midoraisa, until she goes to the mikvah. But let's say, which does occur on the Upper West Side, women say like this, I don't want to get kares, but I like to sleep with my boyfriend. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the mikvah. I'm going to observe the laws of nida, and I'm going to go to the mikvah, right? And when I'm permitted, we're going to be intimate. And when I become forbidden, we're not going to be intimate. So when she goes to the mikvah and she's unmarried, she's not an erva. She could get married to any Jewish guy. So there would be no isser of, there was initially no isser of yichud. Then once that disaster happened with Amnon and Tamar, that loophole got forbidden. That's a rabbinic violation. And then apparently also a non-Jewish woman is not technically an heir. She's not an erva. Okay. She's in a different category. So Shammai and Hillel forbade that as well. Okay. Now, by the way, only with the Weinstein issues, with all the allegations and the Me Too movement and all the sexual abuse that came out as being so prevalent among powerful men and women who were in subordinate situations, one of the things that come clear, one halacha that sort of has now elevated to called, now it's called good HR practice. What is that? You're not alone with any woman.
Right.
Because if you're a guy, and even if you don't do anything, she could falsely claim, you sexually abused me. Or B, conversely, the woman could be in a situation where she's going to get unwanted sexual assaulting or touch or whatever kind of stuff. In other words, no good things come out of men and women being alone unless it's intentional on both sides. And Judy would say, of course, it's a function of, you know, of married life. That's it. So, you know, it's just in a sexually lawless world, for even non-Jews to observe the laws of Yichud is just an intelligent thing. Because the key principle here is that Torah recognized that every person's in two states. And this is, I'm using the terminology of addiction therapy. You have your cold state, when you're cold, when you mean you're thoughtful, you're rational, you're not excited, you're not turned on, okay? And you can make good, and your ability to make good decisions is strong. Then you go into the hot state. What's the hot state? You're aroused, you're sexually interested, you're drunk, you're whatever. You're in a situation where it's a very, then your capacity to make good decisions is what? Very, very low, right? So putting yourself in a Yichud situation, the capacity to go from zero interest to a lot of interest is shockingly quick. It's especially if you have classic situations. I'm giving the classic situation. A guy and girl go out on a date. They go to dinner. And one of them says, oh, would you like to come upstairs for a drink? Or would you like to come drink and watch a movie? Seems very innocent.
What? That's never innocent. It never was innocent.
Right. So the bottom line is, right. So that proves the point. The kavana from the very beginning was to have a situation where the intimacy of the yichud would take the person out of the cold state and bring them to the hot state. But people like to be in denial about that. The halacha makes, they have a halacha called lo plug. There's no differentiation. Even if the girl's 12 years old and you're not interested, or she's 92 years old, or the boy is 13 years old or 93 years old, halacha makes no difference. Boy, girl, man, woman, makes no differentiation. The halacha does not make a distinction. Okay? So that's the basic idea. There's many ideas here, but I just want to give a flavor of really the main point. I want to say that the Torah, in their effort for a person to have a meaningful life, is to avoid destructive behaviors that get a person addicted to things that have a very powerful rush and excitement, but do not fill the hole in their soul. And the way to fill the hole in your soul is to nourish your soul with ideas, with Torah, with chesed, with community, with healthy friendships. That's how you nourish a soul, not with distracting the soul with food, drink, sex, and other addictive behaviors. Because all you do is going to have the original hole, the satisfaction will dissipate, and then you have more problems that you didn't have before. And that really is what the Torah is helping us. The Torah, with all these laws, as I said very nicely, v'chai b'hem, you observe these laws, and you'll live through them. You'll thrive through them. It's discipline, so it's initially not fun. But discipline in any affair, in any area of life, brings the person to the ultimate happiness, and that really is the main point. Any questions?
So, if you're at your friend's house and you guys are all having a lovely time talking, you're meeting their family, and everybody gets up, and it's just you and their group. you and their grandmother in the room, you should get up and run away.
Well, you can. What you can do is you can open the door. Open the door so it's no longer a private place, assuming that people can walk in. So that's a classic thing.
Not necessarily relevant if a third person is simply sitting there. It needs to be a space where anyone could walk in at any point.
Yeah.
If there's three people there.
Well, there's a difference between day versus night.
Oh.
Because nighttime, people tend to fall asleep.
Yeah.
So if one guy and two girls is still yichud. Mm-hmm. Two guys and one girl is not yichud. Which is very interesting. Why? I'll just throw in another. I'm going to add a little bonus track. Why is that? So Rashi says that two girls can both be seduced, like a menage a trois, but two guys, both can't, and one girl, well, the other guy is going to be embarrassed because he's going to be the non-participant, certainly at one point, and he's going to feel shamed. Now, they're talking about regular, what they call, all people get put into two categories. Kesherim, people who have sexual boundaries, who are moral people, and prutes, that people are like, girls gone wild. We'll do anything with anybody at any place. Then, even if you have 100 people in one room, still yichud, because they're not going to feel a problem that you have sex right there.
That seems kind of strange if we're saying, you know, that part of the whole architecture of this is to prevent the practices of Egypt where one woman did marry two men, but then here we have a difference, it seems, or a change where you can't be in yichud with, you know, you are allowed to be in yichud with two men and one woman.
Right, because the halacha was structured to remove the possibility. That's, again, there's two, the thing between kesherim, people who are kosher. What is a kosher person? Person who endeavors to live a sexually moral life. Okay? They have boundaries. Doesn't mean they're infallible. Nobody's infallible. Okay. Versus fruits in mean people who are like if they were invited onto a set of a porn site, they'd be happy. All right. Otherwise known as a fraternity. Those guys are not sharing. They're fruits in. They have no sexual boot. They have no shame.
Okay.
So in the normal, healthy person, two guys, one girl is not yichud, but two girls, one guy, because the phenomena of seduction is still a possibility. This goes actually rather deep in the nature of female sexuality. In other words, she could theoretically join, and once both people are going to join, they're not going to rat each other out. So the fear of being exposed is not present. But with two guys, they both can't participate equally, right? Mechanically, it's not true, right? And therefore, one guy's not going to participate, and the other guy's going to be ashamed because he's in front of the other guy acting like an animal. And he'll feel, and therefore, they'll each person cancel each other out. The fascinating Rashi's. Rashi's in the Kedushin there talks about the mechanics of Yichud. Now, at nighttime, so by day, three women and one guy is not yichud. But at nighttime, it is yichud because people fall asleep. Because it's nighttime. Classic situation. You're at the office. You're working late. By the way, a lot of affairs happen sometimes not in the intentional way, like in the Ashley Madison way, but by accident. In other words, where there's a point of weakness. You're at the office. I mean, I've had people, you know, as a rabbi, I have to deal with all kinds of stuff. Where basically they're at the office and they're working on a project together. Well, you know, it's late. Everybody's, you know, a little bit, you know, sort of like exhausted and not on their game. A little flirting goes on. The office is empty. You know what I mean? It doesn't take a lot There's already a relationship already. The halacha recognizes that, what they call libo gospo. There's a sort of an emotional comfortability. So the line from cold state to hot state is what? Very, very short. Because the person's been part of your team the last 2 years. Then you find yourself alone at night in the office, 11 o'clock, working on a project together. Okay? These things happen. That's why I always encourage people not to go out drinking with their workmates. It's just bad. Companies want to do that because they want to build team rapport. But I've always told anybody who asks me, and not too many people ask me, but don't do the happy hour thing. I mean, first of all, the source of many movies is the old holiday party. What happened to the holiday party movies?
Get drunk and make mistakes.
Drunk and make mistakes and have sex with your coworker, right? Now, it's funny because it's hilarious because, you know, what happened, but blah, blah, blah. But that's not, that actually happens. And it's like, it's just a disaster on every front.
Okay.
All right, guys. I hope you found this definitely not a boring topic. But that's not a boring topic, but I'm giving you sort of a balanced approach to the whole area. Just to in other words, I just want to make one caveat here. The Torah holds that a person should have a healthy, enjoyable sexual life. But in a way that is really promoting the goals of a meaningful life. Marriage, children, and the right proper way. And that's the key point. Versus all these unhealthy ways which are destructive to the person and to others. That's the basic idea. All right, guys, have a lovely night, and I'll see some of you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.